It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now we learn about efforts to prevent injuries to animals and workers in meat processing, creating more humane slaughterhouse environments. UW River Falls is launching what it calls a first-of-its-kind training program. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, in its livestock slaughter chart says roughly 4,800 million pounds of commercial red meat was produced in October, about the same as last year. Be part of this with your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Kurt Vogel is an associate professor of livestock welfare and behavior at UW River Falls, where he directs the Humane Handling Institute. Kurt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate, it's great to join you this morning.
So you've launched or about to launch the Humane Handling Institute with coursework. Why is this training in the meat industry so important?
So since about 2014, the Animal Welfare Lab at UW River Falls has been tracking what we call humane handling enforcement actions, which are the documentation of violations of a law called the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act. The USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service enforces that law. That law has been in place since 1958, and it's focused on making sure that there's safe conditions for workers that are responsible for handling and stunning animals before they're slaughtered, as well as protecting the animals themselves from any sort of distress or suffering. So as we were tracking that data, we started to realize that there were some common threads that came through when it came to these violative actions, and that they seem to be preventable if we focused on training. So that's kind of what moved us in that direction.
And let's be mindful that we're, hearing this can be hard to think about. It can be hard to listen to. How does stunning work? Can you walk us through what that is?
Yeah, I can. So under the law, there are three means that are considered acceptable for stunning animals before they go into the rest of the slaughter process, the conversion from live animal to meat. And they include mechanical as well as chemical or electrical means. And at the core of these, they have to be rapidly effective, and they have to ensure that the animal's not going to wake up, because the core of good stunning practice on the front end of the slaughter process is to make sure that the animal doesn't experience a state of suffering. And so the stunning method will make sure that the animal is rendered unconscious and that they don't return to consciousness as we start that transition to meat.
What happens when stunning is done incorrectly? What is occurring there in these instances when it goes wrong?
When it goes wrong, that's a really difficult situation, because as you can imagine, that's a period of time where the animal can experience substantial suffering. Mm. In addition, the person that is doing that job will generally experience a substantial amount of anguish that goes along with that. So that's just the side of what the animal and the person that's directly involved in the event would experience. And then in addition to that, there are some regulatory processes that will play out. So the facility, the slaughter establishment or plant that's doing this work will have to stop production because the USDA inspector that's monitoring those procedures will have the ability to stop production. And then from there, it can be a short-term fix that happens if it's something that's quick and easy and the plant has a long track record of not having any stun failures, or it could be a case where a plant is shut down for a period of days. So it all depends on the severity of the action and the history that the slaughter establishment has.
You mentioned the several methods of stunning: captive bolts, one, gas, CO2 gas, and electrical, I think, are the three methods. Has the technology kept up with, humane handling? When you look at the technology and the science that's developed around slaughtering animals, has it kept up to the standards that are in effect by the federal government?
I think that I think that if you look back historically, a lot of the early development of these stunning methods was sort of probably more art than science for quite some time, in the sense that it was more of like we try this, we see if it works. If it works, we stick with it. And what we're seeing now, especially over the last, I'd say 3 decades or so, is a lot more focus on scientific validation of the stunning tools that we're using. And assessment of the response of the animal to the application of that stunning tool.
Because the stunning renders the animal insensible to pain and distress. I mean, that is what ideally that stunning situation is doing, right?
Yeah, that's the core objective. Like that is exactly what the goal is. Yes.
And then after the stunning, though, you have to bleed out the animal very quickly. Is there a connection there between humane slaughtering and being able to do that those steps quickly?
Yeah, there is. So that's all part of what would go into designing an effective stunning process in a
Okay.
slaughter establishment, is that we want to make sure that once, well, when the animal comes in and we are moving toward the slaughter process, one of the first steps we want to take is to effectively restrain the animal. So when we do this, we want to make sure that the animal is not in a state where they're distressed, but that they are kept still enough. In a lot of establishments that slaughter cattle, for example, they'll use a head restraint, so that'll hold the head still so they can effectively place their captive bolt stun. That head restraint is typically only held on for the amount of time it takes to place the stun. Then it's released. And this is usually a matter of seconds. So restraint is the first critical piece. That allows us to place an effective stun. Then effective stunning comes into play. We want to do that quickly after restraint so that the animal doesn't become distressed due to the restraint. After the stun is placed, we'll check to make sure that the animal is rendered unconscious. So we use some signs of sensibility to do that. Then after we check the signs of sensibility, then we'll quickly move to the exsanguination process, which is bleed out. So we want that piece to happen quickly, but not rushed and sloppy, if that kind of makes sense. So this is a critical piece where we want to make sure that the people that do that work are well trained, that they feel comfortable doing the work, and that they take a lot of pride in that work so that they do a good job every time.
I'm going to reintroduce you here. Kurt Vogel with us on the Humane Handling Institute, Associate Professor of Livestock Welfare and Behavior at UW River Falls. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Kurt, PETA and other critics of the meat industry have said there is no such thing as humane slaughter or humane meat. What is your response to that?
I think that this is something that societally we've got to watch play out over time. So the perspective I've kind of got on this is that we have here in our country about 32 million cattle and 132 million pigs that are slaughtered on an annual basis. And that shows that there's a substantial appetite in our society for meat. With that in mind, then, my objective during the time that I'm working is to try to help to make sure that as close to none of those animals as possible suffer in that process. There may be a time when we don't consume meat anymore as a society. I don't know when that would be, and that's something that will take a shift in ethic and general practice in how we choose our foods. So that's kind of looking bigger picture, I guess. But then on an individual basis, this is something that people need to make choices on. If you feel uncomfortable consuming animal products, then don't. It's important that we're able to make choices that we're comfortable with, and then live with those choices.
Along those lines, I mean, there are organizations that have a humane certification seal. And I mean, I've seen the logo on packaging for certain animal welfare standards through slaughter. Should we as consumers look for seals of approval like this?
I think that's a good idea. If we look across certification programs for animal welfare throughout animal agriculture in the US, one of the longest standing and most robust is our set of slaughter standards. So they were originally developed with guidance by Dr. Temple Grandin from Colorado State University in the early 1990s. And then they were adopted on a large scale by the meat industry in general and by customers to the meat industry over the late 90s into the early 2000s. This has been a program that's been around for quite a long time and it's pretty effective. So I would say that if you're a consumer that is concerned with the welfare of animals that will make the meat that you eat, then one of the things to look for, yeah, would be some of the welfare labeling that's out there.
We have just a few seconds left, but how do you want this institute to grow in the future? Where do you see it headed?
So the focus of this institute is to serve as a place where we can train people in an environment that is more conducive to learning than trying to learn on the job in a slaughter establishment where things are moving fast. So that's our primary goal, is we want to make sure that we can provide a resource that helps to protect the well-being of animals that are entering slaughter facilities, because ethically we owe that to them. In addition, this will help to protect the welfare of the people that are doing the stunning work and handling work in these plants. And then in the longer term, this should help to contribute to improving the sustainability of animal agriculture in general, because a system is not sustainable that would cause pain and suffering. And so that's kind of our focus here.
Kurt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. This was great.
Kurt Vogel is an associate professor of livestock welfare and behavior at UW River Falls, director of the newly founded Humane Handling Institute. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.